Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ladies and gentlemen, two men from opposite ends of the physical, cultural, and emotional spectrums, Flats and Shanks.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode
15.
15. Thank you, Tommy, of our weekly podcast. I'm David Flatman.
Thomas Shanklin.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Dave.
We come to you this week from our third home, which is the Celtic Manor.
Yeah. Dylan Matthews has been fantastic again.
Is he any relation of Bernard?
Yeah.
It's his mum.
Yeah. He is. And Keris.
Yeah. We've got a little business room. What do you call it?
I call it the Oxwich room.
Oxwich.
Yes. So Dylan Matthews has sorted us out again. We've got tea, coffee, water,
biscuits.
No biscuits were included.
No, but we took some.
One.
Well, we went out to the buffet bit and I would just walk straight. I just had lunch on the way here in the car.
What do you have?
I'll tell you in a minute.
Okay.
It was nutritious, okay?
Yep.
And I walked straight over because I just smelt the food and automatically went for a second lunch. Shanks said, whoa, buffet's not included. Looked like a nice lunch. And I found myself gutted, even though I was full, having had lunch 5 minutes beforehand.
Do you remember when we were in Saracens and Yatesy? What was it?
Mike Yates, fitness coach.
Fitness coach. Brilliant guy.
Yeah.
Real funny, real dry. And at Saracens, we used to have a big kitchen, big tables in the dining room, loads of food, buffet style. And he came over to you and he said, don't eat anything fatty.
Mm.
And you went, what? Like burger, chips, that sort of stuff. And you went, no. He said, don't eat anything fatty.
Yatesy, right? Yatesy, he was 120 when he got his first gig in strength conditioning training, but he moved to Bath from Sarries.
That's right, yeah.
So I went to Bath and he was still there. And he used to do this, his drills were great. I think he did England A with us once. Anyway, something like that. But he had these great, he was really, really good at his job for starters, but he was a right grumpy old git, although we loved him. And he used to walk in the morning, and if you deliberately look really tired walking into weights at 7, 8 in the morning, he'd say, how tired are you? He was really old school. How tired are you, boy? He'd say, I'm knackered, mate. Right, get yourself out of here, mate. You don't want to do any good in here. Breaking your body down. Go upstairs and have a coffee. He'd say, oh, no, Yatesy, I really want to train. Get up there. Get yourself a cappuccino, mate. You rest up for training, boy. So Martin Wood would walk in. It started off the first season we had at Bath with Yatesy. Martin Wood would walk in the morning. And he would just look as tired as possible. He goes, right, tired face. We'll walk in. And he's like, how tired are you? And Woody would like, mate, I'm absolutely broken. I couldn't sleep last night. I don't know why. I think I'm overtired, but it doesn't matter, mate. I'll dig in. Get out of it. Get your feet up. Get your cell phone. You're not training till 2 o'clock. Get your cell phone. So it went from that into the second season we had Yatesy. You had optional weights. You could either do them at 8 a.m. or 2 p.m. before or after training. So Woody would never go in for 8 because he was fat and lazy. And I'd be in at 8 because I didn't sleep. And at 2 o'clock, it'd be like 2:15, and I'd be at home on the sofa with Woody. And Woody would get the phone call. This is a professional, international sportsman, right? He got a couple of caps for England.
It's crazy to think of him as that.
It is, isn't it, when you look at the state of him. He's like a kebab. So
He's like, he's got a body like a drop lasagna.
Yeah, he's got a, mate, he's got a body like an elephant's leg.
Like a burnt out wheelie bin.
Yeah, like a burnt sausage. Anyway, yeah, he's a soup sandwich. He's grim. So he rings up and he's like, Yatesy, what do you want? And he's like, mate, second session today, mate, where are you? Where are you? He goes, Yatesy, will you fucking do one? Just do one, I'm knackered. You're trying to burn me out. Okay, fella, see you tomorrow. It's just like, but then he used to do this sprint drill. I don't get on about Yatesy now. I've got two more things about Yatesy, all right?
Okay.
He used to do this sprint drill, and he'd say, I want you accelerating so hard that you're tearing the ground up. I want to see that ground torn up. Then he'd turn away and talk to another group, and we'd all stand there raking the ground. And like, just when he looked away, just like jog through a 10-meter sprint, he'd look around and go, look at the ground, outstanding. So we used to get into him, and because he was so old people just pee all the time and don't sleep, right?
Yeah.
So he's always, anyway, apart from peeing all the time, he was always in at like 6 a.m. Dave Barnes, a Bath prop, is like that as well. He's like a working Labrador. He doesn't stop moving, right? So one day he gets a spare set of keys for the Lambridge training ground at Bath, which is this old dump we used to train in.
That's just on the way to Bath on the left-hand
yeah,
side.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. Like Porter yeah. Cabin. We've been training there for, well, pretty much my whole career there. And
big dogging spot now.
Yeah, that's yeah. right. Yeah, so I still go back.
Yeah.
Great memories there. And Barnes unlocks the door, because Yatesy used to unlock the changing ground and the training ground in the morning, get the coffee machine on. And Barnsley sneaks in, right? So bear in mind, Barnsley is playing, he's an elite prop forward at this point, right? He sneaks in and unlocks the door, gets in and locks it behind him with a spare set of keys that he got the day before.
Yeah.
And he was telling us all he was going to do it. And he's like, get there early, just get there early. So we're all, Simon Taylor, the back row, he lived Scottish. On the street opposite, right? This little quiet street opposite the training ground. So we all hid in our car, parked our cars up there and hid in our cars until we saw Yatesy get there. And as soon as Yatesy arrived, we just all piled into the car park behind him and said, morning, Yatesy. What are you lot doing here? So, mate, we've got to do some extra stretching. Oh, good lads. Mate, can you let us in? Yeah, mate, I've got the keys, boys. So he walks in and Barnsley's hiding in there. And Barnsley's like, I'm going to kill the old fucker. I'm going to kill him. I'm going to make him have a heart attack. Let's kill Yatesy, right? So it would have been great fun if it actually killed him. Anyway, he walks in. He walks around the corner and Barnsley's there in the dark. It's winter. To Yatesy. And jumps out and tries to give him a heart attack. Yatesy instinctively smacks him straight on the jaw and drops him. Absolutely drops him. So Barnsley is bent back over his knees. All the boys are there watching, because we're just following Yatesy in, but we know it's going to happen. And he walks in and just bang, instinct, just smacks Barnsley right on the chin. Barnsley went down like a sack of shit.
Yeah.
Oh, it was great. It was,
mate,
one of the best days.
Can you try and find out what he's up to, what he's doing now?
Yeah, he can't be still alive. Can he?
I don't know.
He's a stubborn old boy,
though. I always remember when he was fitness coach at Saracens and he was having a go at the players because we were turning up to late for training and stuff because everyone lived everywhere and stuff. He goes, you know, you choose where you live, lads.
Yeah.
And then Chris Chesney just pipes up and goes, what? You chose to live in Basildon?
I remember that.
But I always remember he had an amazing photo on his wall, and it was, we used to do all this training at Monument Hill, didn't we?
Yeah.
Just
horrible hill sprints.
Yeah, Southgate. Was it? Or...
Enfield.
Mm. Was it Enfield?
Something
like Foster's.
That.
Round Cockfosters.
Yeah.
Wasn't it? On the way into Cockfosters. And we just got this massive monument at the top, and he had an amazing picture. And everyone's knackered at the top, bar one person that just shining out, Gerald Arasa.
Oh, gee.
Do you remember him?
Oh, yeah, Sexual Chocolate.
Yeah, so I picked him up. I used to live close to us, and I picked him up before a game once. And I drove to his house, collect him. He's in a shotgun seat of the car. We're driving to Vicarage Road for a game, and I'm looking at him and I can see glitter in his afro, and I go, Gerald, were you out last night? And he looks at me, he goes, Shanks, mum's the word, right? And then spends the next half hour pulling out glitter from everywhere. We had a social. Remember we used to do the Piccadilly line, didn't we? From Cockfosters all the way into King's Cross.
Rough gig, that, mind.
Yeah. Everyone, we used to stop off every stop, which would be about 14 stops, have a pint, back in the tube.
Yeah.
And
that windowless pub at Seven Sisters Road.
There were some shocking ones, weren't there? We tried, and then we thought it'd be a good idea to pass people through the trains, didn't we? Put the windows down on the tube.
It was a good idea.
Yeah. Get everyone to clap and stuff like that.
I maintain that's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know where I'm going with this story now.
We're talking about Yatesy.
Oh, Gerald Arasa.
Gerald Arasa.
So we go to King's Cross. We've had 14 pints. You know, doesn't touch the sides for people like me and you. But, you know, Ben Johnson's crying.
Yeah, yeah, he's already gone home. Yeah.
He's too pissed. And we're in the Hippodrome then, in the night, Leicester Square. Yeah. And I'm at the bar, going around in, and I was a student at the time. Well, not a student, but I didn't have much money at the time. I was on this YTS training scheme at Saracens.
Same as, yeah.
And Gerald Arata goes, he goes, "Shanks, give me a JD and Coke, double," like this, right? And just slides a £2 coin over to me. It's like... Gerald, I don't think that's going to be enough, mate.
Yeah. I remember getting, because he lived in North London near us. Yeah. We lived in Stoke Newington, didn't we?
Been a massive flood there, actually, this week.
Has it?
Yeah, a 30-inch pipe, water pipe burst.
Ooh, jeez.
Yeah. I know.
Oh, well, lucky our flash motors aren't parked there anymore. Yeah. And I was, Danny Grucott lived up the road before we went to Bath in Holloway, where it was near the prison. Actually quite a nice house, but in a bit of a rough area, both, all of ours. But we gave G a lift home, and he sort of lived North London somewhere, and we're just outside Tottenham or something like that. And we, anyway, on the whole way back in the car, and he's like, "Yeah, man, I've got to get out of this area, man. It ain't good, man. Every time the brother's walking down the street, man, they're stopping you, man, for nothing. Stopping you for nothing, saying you look threatening, man. It ain't right, it ain't right." Anyway, we were just like, "Yeah, that isn't great, actually, G, you're right." And we loved G. Like, he was a public school boy, you know. We knew G, but anyway, then he gets out of the car, and...
He couldn't drive, could he?
No, he couldn't drive, no. He got out of the car, and he'd been training, like, so he had a pair of jeans, but he got changed to his jeans or whatever, and he was going straight out to meet his mates, his crew, he called them, going to meet the crew, at the cinema, right? They were going to watch, like, some animated adventure at the cinema. He's like, "Yeah, meeting the boys, man, meeting the crew for a couple of beers before we go out." "Man, where are you going?" "Yeah, we're going to watch, like, Jumanji." Dad and I were pissing ourselves. He gets out of the car, and he's like, he's got this full length leather coat. I mean, he looked amazing in it,
because
like he
was like Shaft.
Yeah, Shaft, the Shaft coat. And he's like, yeah, amazing looking guy, wasn't he? Like, really good looking guy. Shredded up, like, big guy as well. And he got out of the car and strutted, like, you could see the bottom of this. He's like 5'10 or something.
Yeah.
And this coat was 5'9" long. And the bottom of it's almost, but it sounds ridiculous because it was. Excuse me. But he struts off down the road, and he honestly looks like he's about to chin every person he walks past with the full-on gangster lean. So we ring him, and he's like, "Hello." I was like, "Gee, it's Flats. We're still in the car." He looks around. "Yeah, have I forgot something?" "No, mate, we're just telling you. Drop the strut, mate. Do you want a salad with that bowl? That's what you're getting pulled over, mate." "No, mate, it's race, man. It's not race, mate. It's because you look like you're gonna knock people out."
Did you come with us that time? You watched three films in a cinema, but you only paid for one.
No.
Oh, it's me, Tony Rocks, who I met in the Sevens.
Rocky, did
yeah,
you?
Yeah, seen that.
Saracens, open side for years, England Sevens legend.
Yeah, still very quick, ran onto the field with the messages.
Yeah. Yeah, he's working with the England Sevens team now, isn't he?
That's right.
Has he still got really, really black eyes?
Yeah, he does.
Like dead man's eyes?
Yeah, it's now gone to his teeth.
Oh, well.
John Dawson.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and...
Tight head prop.
Matt Kearns. And we watched one film... and we didn't pay for the other three. Watch three.
You didn't pay for the other two?
No, that's right.
That's criminal.
It's a great story.
It's a hell of a story.
Just thought of it then.
It's a hell of a story. If I can't sleep tonight, can I give you a ring and you run that past me again?
Are you going to ask me what I've been up to?
Well, wasn't going to, no. What have you been up to?
I'm going
to
cut that cinema bit out of this anyway, so if you want to remember.
I don't blame you. Yeah, we're really good at cutting stuff out, aren't we?
Yeah,
we're really
good with the reason I was saying that is because there's some amazing films we watched. Remember Kevin and Perry Go Large?
Oh,
that
yeah. Oh yeah,
amazing.
I remember being in the cinema, the Odeon. What is the road I'm trying to think of?
North
Turnpike Lane. Anyway, right. Anyway, North London. It's where we dropped G off to G Arasa. And I remember going in there with my girlfriend at the time to watch the Hannibal movie, and there were all these it wasn't very full, the cinema. So we're sitting a couple of rows in front of us was this big group of lads. Like the big group of rude boys, and they were kind of really loud on their phones before the film started, and I was like, geez, I hope they don't talk the whole way through the film, because it's basically all of them were reasonably large, and there was about, I mean, when I say there are 15 of them, it's probably 10 of them.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, anyway, 10 minutes into the film and we actually can't hear the film, and my girlfriend at the time was just like, should we just go? And I was like, nah, I'm not going to go. I think, well, there's CCTV, they're not going to fill me in. So I just was like, boys, that's enough. That is enough noise.
Did you do it like Ross and the Friends, like that?
It was like, yeah, like zip it with my, the lobster hands. Yeah. And I did it like Ross Kemp, actually.
Okay.
And I remember thinking, they probably think I'm really hard, even though I'm not. I'm thinking, and they were actually really nice. They were like, sorry, mate, sorry, dead right, sorry. And then one of them got their phone out 5 minutes later. The mate was like, oh, put your phone away, man. You know, they were actually really nice. And then Hannibal, the bit in Hannibal where he's on like the trolley and he's got the, they take the face mask off him and the lady walks past and just bang, he bites her. Yeah. He leans forward and bites her. I'm a jumper, like I properly jump at jumpy films, and I jumped and let out this really high pitched squeal, like by accident. So my girlfriend was laughing. On the way out, all these lads are waiting outside, right by the door.
Yeah.
Waiting outside by the door, and I was like, and my girlfriend was like, oh no. And I was like, I hope we're not getting into a fight. And they're like, here he is. And I was like, okay, looks like we're brawling and I'm going to get filled in.
Yeah.
And they're like, for a big guy, man, you scream like a girl, innit?
Right. I remember another one. It was on Holloway Road, the cinema.
Holloway Road, that's it.
And we were watching Lord of the Rings, the first one out. And everyone got there early before the film started. And we got a little bit late. We had the book seats. It was me, you, and your girlfriend at the time.
Yeah.
So there's no music, there's no film on. Everyone's sat there waiting, and we make a bit of a commotion as we're getting in. And I sit down in my seat, and you're a big guy, so you take a little bit of time sitting down. And I remember you grab the size of the seat, and you're coming down slowly into the seat. And I just got this. Mate, that's disgusting. What are you doing? That's horrendous.
It probably worked though.
You start sweating.
Yeah.
Oh.
It probably worked. It was so simple, such a budget gag, but everyone bought it. So
what about when you go with a team and you always let the first person walk in?
Yeah.
Hello everybody. Look at me.
Mate, we go out with Danny Grucock a lot, and he's like achieved so much in the game. We're probably going to talk about him later when we talk about Dylan Hartley, just because they're both got bad records. But yeah. Dan achieves so much, but he's so shy, as you know. So like, he can stand on stage and talk about stuff easy enough, but everywhere we go, it happens to this day. Matt Powell, the old scrum half who now works at Bath, we're really old mates, as you know, because you are too. And everywhere we go, Powley will find a way to announce Danny. Like, mate, we'll go to like Pizza Express, and he will find a way to announce Danny. We walked into this pub near his house a little while ago. Dan's like, fancy a drink? And it's like, yeah, yeah. So we're in Wells where he lives. He's just moved. We're in Wells, Cathedral City. And we walk to his local pub, and it's this little dump down the road with like 10 people in it, right?
Yeah.
Not dump, perfectly nice, little pub. Hardly anyone in there. And Powley's like, give me 5 minutes. I've just got to make a couple of calls for work. It's a Sunday night. So we walk in to the pub.
Yeah.
And Powley walks in, and they're like, they have prepared a welcome. It's awful. And Powley walks in, he's like, ladies and gentlemen, he says the same thing every time. Bath, England, British Lions, it's Danny Grucock! As you walk in, and there's like 10 people who are old, don't know who he is. Dan tries to walk out, but we're wise to it, so we block the entrance, and he just has to stand there.
Right. It's horrible when that happens. Like we at the Sevens last weekend, we were doing it to Joe Roth, because he was sitting by us every time he got up.
Yeah,
everyone was shouting, hey, ladies and gentlemen, put your hands together for Australian 87 caps, two tries against the Lions.
They hate it.
I did done to me once at Harlequins. We went to watch Harlequins Blues last year, and Reece Blumberg, mate of mine, just,
he gets a lot of airtime on here, Blumberg. He doesn't deserve
it. He just shouts out, we're having a drink in the clubhouse under the stand, nothing's going on, no music. He just all of a sudden he starts going, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm loving it. I'm thinking, what's he going to say? He goes, please welcome to the clubhouse, Cardiff Blues and Wales legend, Tommy.
Oh, savage.
I don't often get embarrassed. I'm looking for a table to hide under. It's, and like, there's a few people looking and like, and I'm like, I've got like about four little claps like that.
Oh,
I mean, it was horrendous.
Mate,
I hated it.
The worst ever, the two worst ever. One was we're at the Comedy Store in Clapham, a load of us, and everyone's having a few beers. And one of the halfway through someone's comedy act, this big Aussie guy comedy act, one of our mates just shouts, Danny Grucock's in the house! And it's just like, Danny looks across the table, he's called Hugh, this guy, Hugh Williams, he's like, Williams, last chance. And in the end, like 10 minutes later, and he gets halfway through it, and Dan got him by the throat. Dan will finish, like, he'll fill him in. He won't muck about, like, best mate or not. Dan will fill him in if he loses the plot.
Yeah.
So luckily Williams is so like drunk, he kind of collapses under Dan's grip, and then the comedian picks up and he goes, who the fuck is this Danny Grucock? And everyone looks at him, who are you, mate? And Dan's looking at the comedian like,
is it Dan Edna?
It was, yes.
Yeah, that's
yes.
It.
Yeah.
This, hey, where are you, mate?
Indian guy. Yeah. And it was brutal. But the best one ever was Danny's own stag do in Edinburgh or in the Borders or something like that. So I had a mate of a mate who had this little B&B and we went deer stalking, but without any deer stalking. So we went for the walk, basically, because we didn't want to kill any deer. I didn't.
Is that because you wanted to go, like, the film Deer Hunter?
Yeah. Like, I wanted to go feral.
Squeal, piggy.
No, that's...
what's that?
That's
Deliverance.
Deliverance, yeah.
Same thing, they go and shoot in.
Exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
So... We're in this pub, and they just go to a pub for an all-dayer, and it's the Heineken Cup final, you know, where Leinster came back and beat Northampton.
Yeah.
It was that day.
Oh, yeah.
And this was a football pub, right? So we go in and we find out, can you show the rugby? And the guy's like, I would rather not, because there's a football match on, whatever it is, Rangers or whatever are playing. And in the end, Matt Powell persuades them, goes on and on, and says, look, it's only 20 minutes gone already.
Yeah.
Can we just put the rugby on? So we put the rugby on. Two guys come straight to our table and say, have you asked them to put this on? In the thick Scottish accent that I won't do because you'll mock it. Have you had them put this on? And we're like, yeah, it's okay if we just put... And the guy's like, mate, we're watching the football.
I love Scottish accent.
So in the end, there's two TVs and they put the football on one. The guy literally walked to our table and said, why have you put this on? They didn't like it. So half time, you know, Dave Thompson.
Yeah.
Another guy who played at Sarries.
Tomo.
Tomahawk.
Never met him.
He gets up on the mic and it's all pre-planned. And he's like, hi, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Dave Thompson. Great to be here. Great to be for the Heineken Cup final day. And everyone's looking at him like, mate, we don't give a shit about what you're talking about. And he's like, it just gives me great pleasure to welcome up Bath, England, British Lions, Danny Grewcock for a quick Q&A. He brings it. Dan's like, no. And he's like, come on, Dan. No. Dan. Come on. And
everybody give him a round of applause.
And it was savage. And he's like, guys, you guys over there. And he's all these meathead football fans looking over. Guys, you must have a couple of questions for Danny about his career. And he like walks over with a roving mic. And the guy's like, not really. It was awful, mate. It was absolutely awful. And then Dan lost a bet and had to get naked and go on top of go car surfing. But there you go.
Really?
Just immature.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So what have you been up to, Tommy?
Oh, mate, well, I watched the Blues play on Saturday afternoon.
You went live?
Yeah.
Doing the media
live.
Stuff, yeah?
Yeah, loads of media, mate.
Yeah, flat out when you...
Yeah, just too much.
Don't know how your agent books it all in, to be honest.
No, I was writing reports on the TV, on the radio, wireless, call it.
Offering comment.
Yeah, and then at the clubhouse and stuff. So watch them play Bath. We'll get onto the results a little bit later on.
Will we?
Maybe.
We should talk about rugby, really.
We'll touch on them. But I was up at Cobra Rugby Club yesterday, on Sunday.
Where's that to then?
I'm an ambassador for NatWest Rugby Force, whatever. And part of that is that a rugby club gets use of me for the full year. So I had to go up to Cobra.
What can I use you for?
Anything they want.
Wow.
I missed the first gig.
Yeah.
Booked a holiday, unfortunately. So they sent a lookalike up. They sent Nugget up.
Gareth Thomas.
Yeah, Nugget. I think they preferred him.
Jimmy Somerville.
Yeah.
Ross, no.
Voldemort. Anyway,
So
I went up there and I had a brief from NatWest that I could only have two drinks at the dinner.
They gave you that in the brief?
Yeah, which was fine. you know, it didn't matter anyway because I was driving. So
yeah,
I had five.
Tommy,
no joking.
We don't joke about that.
No, that is correct, mate. Five. Okay. You haven't asked me five what? Squashes.
All right.
And so it's a fairly good brief about talking about your past and some of the highlights of your career and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I'm going there thinking, right, this is going to be a fairly sensible chat. I get there, I meet the president of the club, and he says, got some bad news for you. The strippers are cancelled this year. The leisure centre won't allow it. So I get there, and it is a flat-out gentleman's evening.
Yeah.
So there's no way I'm going to end up doing... And there's no way I'm going to do a Q&A with 280 people there.
No.
So I said, look, let me just speak for like half hour, 40 minutes. So I give him some comedy gold.
Oh, I bet you did, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I give him the story about me, you and Nugget. Remember that one?
No.
You don't remember it?
Well, I don't know.
Me, you and Martin Williams. You know, when we get sent to heaven.
No.
Ah. Well, me,
Flats. Remind me.
Me, Flats and Martin Williams are up in heaven. And we're at the gates of heaven. And St. Peter's welcomes us. And he says, look, guys, the deal is if you come to heaven is you have to be strapped on to a woman. Mm. To determine that woman, you have to run across a duck pond. And how many ducks you kill determines how good looking your woman is. So the more ducks you kill, the uglier she is. So Nugget, being like the leader, being the alpha male, the captain, the fatherly figure, says, boys, I'll go first. And he runs across the pond. He only kills seven ducks.
Mm.
Oh man. So Peter comes over, straps a horrendous looking bird to him. Horrendous. Yeah. Like, you know, like the ones that work in Greg's.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, moles. Yeah. Hair's coming out. Strapped to her for life in heaven.
Oh.
I go next. Sidestepping across the duck pond. Look back. Eight ducks.
Oh, brutal.
My God. Shot putter. Russian shot putter strapped to me. Adam's apple. Beard. Moustache. Got her for life. It didn't really bother me that much.
No, I'm happy with that, really.
So me and Nugget, a week later, see Flats. He's strapped to an absolute stunner. A worldie. An absolute worldie. So how'd you manage that? He goes, oh, she killed 15 ducks.
But
anyway, I was at this dinner, this Cobra dinner.
Awful.
And
that's what you dropped on these poor people, was it?
I was at this Cobra dinner. No, I give them insight, mate.
Cool. I bet you do, yeah.
And there's a comedian called Pete Emmett. Pete Emmett. Mm. Never met him before. First time I met him, he does a bit of work at Everton Football Club. He does a lot of MCing and stuff. Absolutely incredible.
Was he?
Really, like, relentless and quite rude. I won't tell you his opening remarks, but, you know, he's talking about, he's gone, ladies and gentlemen, he's from Halifax, and he's gone, the hardest thing about being a comedian is getting heckled on stage. He's gone, hardest thing, get it all the time. He goes, did a gig last week, I was on the mic, bloke says, yeah, shit. I'm like, I don't know, I keep going. He goes, I've shagged your mum. He goes, I walk over to him and say, look, dad, go home, will you? there's a load of...
It's the way you tell him, yeah?
Yeah.
It's all about delivery, isn't it?
There's a load of youth team players at this dinner, and they're making a massive noise, and he's going, oi, lads, where'd you learn to whisper? Under helicopter? he's picking on this guy non-stop. There's a guy called Bud at this dinner, and he's obviously been told to pick on him, and he's talking about Bud, and he's talking about this guy Bud, you know, he fought in a Nigerian. He's talking about his boxing career, Bud. He goes, Bud's a bit of a boxer. He didn't win a round. He didn't win a match, so he's arranged this match with a Nigerian with no feet. He goes, might be able to win this. A Nigerian with no feet. So he talks about this fight and stuff, and he talks about Bud getting knocked out, and he goes, he's on the floor, and a good friend of his wakes him up, slaps him around the face with an arm. And Bud wakes up and he goes, How did I get on? Did I win? And he goes, no, you lost, mate. He goes, but there's a bit of a mix up. He goes, you know that Nigerian with no feet? I actually got it wrong. 19 fights without defeat. He was picking on this. There was a girl called Belle there from Synergy, and Synergy do all
Synergy
that.
Like the activation PR company. They're really good actually.
Yeah, they are really good. They're really nice. He's talking to her, and she's quite young. He's gone. You remind me of my wife. She got beard as well. This poor girl. She's probably 20, 21 or something like that. But he was very good.
Yeah,
very good. So we did a bit of a talk there for half hour, 40 minutes. Yeah, just carried me off stage like
a hero, like Jesus returning to Nazareth,
something like that,
a donkey, amazing,
like Dead Poets Society.
Oh, I can imagine, yeah like Francois Pienaar when they won the World Cup.
So that was my Sunday, 6 hour round drive, which is not the greatest, but I listened to Nomad by Alan Partridge, his audiobook.
Is it good?
Very, very, very good, my
is
friend.
It?
Yes, yeah. So that's me. What have you been up to, boy?
Well, lots and lots of stuff, busy times, but I had a winter barbecue. You can see it. I don't know where I put it. But it absolutely hosed with rain. So we actually had just dinner at my house with food, what was cooked on the barbecue. But it was nice. Intimate affair.
How intimate?
Who would you know? Really intimate. We all ate nude. Lee Mears came.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of people you would know. Matt Powell, Lee Mears, and wives, and a couple of others, and a couple of other mates, whatever. But it was
good. Did you make Adam come?
No, Adam didn't come. He's coming to my house this Wednesday, though. This is someone that Shanks knows from my... We've been mates since we were little kids.
Adam Charmaine. Tim Ducks, is he going?
No, he's my school captain. He lives in Miami now.
But my mate
Adam came on my stag do to Ibiza, which was... you don't need the details, guys, but it was 5 days, and it was... it was so aggressive, actually, that... Firstly, I would never want to do it again.
No.
Couldn't ever do it again. I wouldn't have it in me. Secondly... of the tourists, there were three lads that left after 24 hours and said, I just can't do this anymore, I'm out.
If you did go back, it would be nice to bring a family size toilet roll pack with us, because
ran out, didn't we?
Yeah, the villa left us one toilet roll on each toilet. There's probably about four toilets in the villa, and they ran out after about a day. So dishcloths, hands,
oh, it's bad times,
socks.
I remember among other things,
doing a funnel underwater.
Being underwater and doing two cans of Amstel through a funnel underwater. It's quite a feat, that.
Yeah, it's good though.
And one of the lads walking around is just, I mean, this is pot kettle, but my mate Dog, who's got just the worst rig you've ever seen, horrible nick. And he would walk around, he would be kind of nude on our premises the whole time because he was so hot, because he's so fat. He was so fat, he's in better nick these days. But he's walking around, he's completely nude all the time. And the boys, it started getting a bit annoying. Because he was just like, he would pretend, he'd walk around really drunk during the day, and he'd be like, oh, I might do wee-wees anywhere, because I'm like pretending to be a baby or something. And he walked past Danny Grucock again on his sun lounger and pretended to like gesture like he was going to do a wee on Dan, pretty funny. And Dan had enough, so Dan got the full, got quite big hands, and he got the full man guard, and he grabbed hold of Dog by his balls and just, and he said, get some clothes on and get away from me. And it was kind of like he held him there for ages, and Dog was like, all right, let go. And in the end, the lads are coming over saying, Dan, let go, mate. He had hold for a little while.
That's like a voice from the movies, that.
Yeah, but then he lets go, and you think, well, he's going to go and wash his hands. He just goes back to reading his magazine.
Oh.
Yeah.
Cool.
Kept it pretty real.
Yeah.
But there was a lot going on that trip. So, yes, had a little barbecue, which was, you know, what do? You kind of cook food. But I went to a pantomime. I went to a pantomime on Sunday night in Bath with... the family, and it was 2.5 hours long.
What pantomime, mate?
Aladdin. Ah. But the last Sunday, I was meant to be... Have I told you this? I was meant to be at Ricky Gervais live in Bath.
No.
And I couldn't get a flight back from Newcastle
soon
enough. So my mates went.
Yeah.
Had a nice little dinner beforehand, a couple of drinks. It was so perfect, because my mate works at a theatre in Bath, and I was like, you've got to get me tickets to this. I would never normally ask. I know what a ball ache it is to continually be asked for tickets.
Yeah.
I got asked this morning for 4 tickets to a game. It's like, seriously, it's non-stop. I said, I've never asked before. And he's like, right, I've got us tickets. I've got a table booked at a restaurant. They got an account with a taxi firm. I'm going to send a taxi. You can have a few beers. Ricky Gervais, it's going to be amazing.
Sounds good, mate.
I was in Newcastle instead.
Did they record it for you?
No, nothing.
No, not like that advert where you record it and then you put those 3D glasses on, you can watch it back.
No, that's not actually a truth. It doesn't actually happen, that stuff.
Oh.
Anyway, there you are. So, very, very busy. And I was at the gym this morning, which is why I was 5 minutes late.
Yeah, I went to the gym as well.
Yeah, I was working out hard.
What'd you do? I see you got your CrossFit t-shirt on.
CrossFat.
Yeah.
What's the point in doing CrossFit if you don't tell people you do CrossFit, and every time you do it, you don't tell the world?
I mean, there's a sketch, isn't there, where there's these male toilets, there's a load of urinals, there's one guy in the corner, I'm having a pee, and another guy comes in a CrossFit t-shirt.
Well, he walks all the way and stands next to the guy, right next to him, and says, hey, I do CrossFit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't do real CrossFit though, because my body doesn't work well enough, but we did some squats, repped out a few back squats.
Squats, nice. Did that's not CrossFit, by the way, that's just squats.
That's just squats. We did a CrossFit WOD workout of the day after that, which was involved running, so I kind of switch off and get through that. But the squats were good, I haven't squatted for a while, so we got a few reps underway, got a few reps done.
Nice.
It was good. Did a 5-3-1 and then a second set of 5-3-1. Are you happy with that?
Good. I did a bit of Judy Dench.
Did you?
Yeah.
How was that?
Yeah, it was right. Good.
Got to get it done, haven't you?
Mate, you've got to get the chest.
Yeah.
No pecs, no sex, that's what they say.
Where do they say that? Are we going to talk rugby at all on this pod? Let's talk. Should we just go straight into Dylan Hartley's red card?
Okay, so that is from the Northampton-Leinster game. Leinster win, 37-10. Again, not great performance by Northampton, struggling.
Battling hard.
Yeah.
Things aren't going well for them, and
right, what's your view on the Hartley red?
Definite red.
Yeah,
no question. And everyone says as soon as you what kind of now we're on it right now we're on it.
Oh, here he goes. Eyebrows are right.
What I don't, it's like the George North thing. It's like as soon as Dylan Hartley does something, everyone just piles in and goes absolutely crazy, and there's very little perspective around. And as soon as someone says, well, Sean O'Brien was falling towards the floor, you say, well, you're an apologist for Dylan Hartley. No, I'm not. Sean O'Brien was falling towards the floor. I am not defending Dylan Hartley. Those two things, they're not mutually exclusive, if that's the right phrase. So Sean O'Brien's tackle around the legs is falling out. I think Dylan is going in with a swinging arm, cheap shot into the back of Sean O'Brien. He's trying to whack him from the back, which isn't great, but to be honest, it ain't exactly a red card. Sean O'Brien falls, Dylan's too pumped, his eyes are closed and he's swinging his arm, you know, he's kind of blind, he's seen red mist, catches him right in the tweed, definite red, ridiculous, cost himself a Lions captaincy, I would imagine, in that moment, if he was in the running for it. So that is one thing, indefensible. Putting him on the bench, I found completely odd, and it stuck out to me as though the coaching staff were trying to make some sort of statement by saying, well, he's England captain there, whatever they are, 13 out of 13. But our lad, Mikey Hayward's doing better. It's like you rest. You think about the front row you're playing with Leinster. They've got, the prop who's on the bench is pushing for a Lions spot, let alone the two that are starting. And you've got Cronin, brilliant player. It's like, surely you start your England hooker.
When I first saw that red, I saw it from the angle from behind. So you're viewing Dylan Hartley's back of his shirt. And it looks like he's come in with a swinging arm, which you can't do.
Yeah.
But as Sean O'Brien's fallen, he's caught the head. And it hasn't looked like he's purposely gone for the head.
Yeah.
When you flip that angle and you see it from the front, it looks far, far worse.
Yeah.
It looks like he's gone for... I think it's bad timing. I'm not sure he's actually meant to go for Sean O'Brien's head. He's just meant to swing the arm in.
Yeah.
Bit of momentum, which you're not allowed to do. Red card, but not as bad. And certainly not the worst red card I've ever seen at all. So red card, he'll get banned. I think he automatically gets 6 weeks, which will be reduced to 3 weeks for good behaviour, but that's not going to happen with him when his past
record. Mind you, the last year in the England stuff, I think he will have more mitigation than people think. I think he might do a bit better than people think on that ban.
Okay, well, we'll see, but we both agree it's red card. Tuilagi, he was yellow carded for Leicester. Mate, nilled. Leicester were nilled by Munster. And we know how good Munster have been this year so far and how emotionally charged they are. They were incredible,
that.
But I did not know, nor did I. Tuilagi comes flying over the top of a ruck, using his shoulder, gets yellow carded. I think it's the right decision. He doesn't connect with anyone, but he goes right over the top, and there is a swinging arm. And if he was to connect with a Munster player, that shoulder of his would have been in the Munster player's face.
Yeah, it's a big shoulder.
Yeah,
and huge. I don't mind Manu Tuilagi getting yellow cards and red cards, because every time he's in the sin bin or sent off, he can't get injured. So I think that's a good thing.
True.
But the one that the decision I dislike the most from the weekend is Kirkley Beale's yellow card against Connaught for, in his first game for Watts. He was Kirtley Beale was really, really good.
Played him at 12 as well, yeah. Scored the first try.
He was so strong.
Mate, he just rode that tackle.
Yeah. He's been in the gym, mate. Since he did his knee, he's been in the gym. He looks big and he looked really physical. But that yellow card for the high tackle, it's... Even Dai Young's come out and said it, and DORs don't generally come out and say these things.
No.
And you don't want to be the guy that says game's gone soft once you've retired because it's so unoriginal. But it's a joke. It's an absolute joke. That yellow card is a joke. You've got someone, he's tackling someone, I don't know, he's not even swung an arm in. It's kind of, I suppose he has swung an arm in. But it's a high tackle of someone whose head is chest height to the tackler. And when they're, it's all right, if one of them's Devon Toner and the other one's, you know, Peter Stringer, then there's going to be a problem. But these guys are a similar height, similar size blokes. And I just think, find it and Google it. It was just a joke. Going back to the Northampton game against Leinster briefly, another thing that really puzzled me was that because Dylan Hartley was sent off, they had to bring Mikey Hayward back on, and they got to sacrifice a player. And they took off Tom Wood, who was by 800 miles their best player. He was so on it. He was in attack, they didn't do a huge amount, but in defence, he was on it. And been playing so well for England, I thought, well, you've just given the game up. You've given up by taking him off. Then, after the match, I don't know, to listeners at home, I don't know if we're going to be able to do it. We might not. But I've got the audio on my phone of Tom Wood's interview with BBC Radio Northampton after the game.
Yeah.
And I say this respectfully, the questioning is odd. It's a little bit fawning and it's just an odd line of questioning. The first question being, well, there actually was loads of positives to take out of that, wasn't there, Tom? And he's like, no, of course there weren't. It was odd. His answers, I'm going to go so far as to say this, Tommy, make it the best post-match rugby interview in terms of content I've ever heard. It's that good. Just brutally, brutally honest, really bright, really bright, really incisive, really articulate, and pulls no punches. It's, well, if we can't attach it to this pod, then Google it.
Any comedy involved in it?
No.
Oh, right.
No, I mean, Nick, is it Cummings, the honey badger?
Yeah.
He does the best. He does the best comedy ones.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
for content, this was amazing. And you hear that and you think, poof, you know, if Dylan Hartley's not England captain, Tom Wood's just put himself in the running by the sort of personality he's got.
Ulster Claremont, 39-32 to Ulster. Did you see the Piatau try?
Yeah.
Mate.
He's a joke.
I scored one like that against Romania.
Did you?
Yeah. And without sounding offensive, you know, I think the Romanians were a tougher competition back in 2004.
You reckon? Charles Piatau's ridiculous. His brother's just, Siali's just arrived at Bristol. He's arriving at Bristol in January. He's just signed for Bristol.
He is so good, Piatau.
Yeah, he's so good.
He's incredible.
He's so good.
But what a win for Ulster as well. Ian Henderson, man of the match.
Yeah.
He's going to be a British line.
We've spoken about him, haven't we?
We have.
And playing at six, wasn't he, for Ulster? And I like that because I think, as we said before, that the area in which the British lines are most spoiled, I think, is second row at the moment if everyone stays fit. And they're going to... They'll take four or five, but they will need a number of guys that can cover both.
Of course you will. Of course you will.
Yeah. And he's like Stephen Ferris never went in the second row, but since Stephen Ferris, I don't think they've had a bona fide freak like that.
Not quite sure about his outfit on the weekend with the TV. Did you see it?
No.
He had a blue suit on.
Yeah.
Black shirt and I'm not sure what colour tie it was.
Should we have a word?
Yeah,
so a quick word.
We'll try and get a picture up on the website. But then Toulon Scarlets, when you watch that game, they've played obviously before and what have you, but it is the actual size of players is incredible.
Yeah.
The size difference is so clear to see. You look at Nanu and Bassero in that midfield.
It's jokes.
Bassero had one of his good games as
well. Yeah, he did. They don't come around very often, in my opinion.
Do you see Habana miss a kick?
No.
So he gets a ball, he's trying to clear the line. He doesn't miss the ball, but just spoons it off.
Oh, savage.
Yeah.
Mind you, he's probably got enough credit in the bank by now.
Yeah.
Did you see Pascal Pape's dive?
No.
Theatrical dive. He got chinned by Phil Burley. I think I've made that name up. Anyway, he got chinned, admittedly got a little dig, but Pascal Pape is massive. 65 caps in the French second row, so he's hard. And he just dived and did a proper football dive. Got the guy done. It was horrendous. Horrendous. I'm going to go so far as to say I want him banned for every bit as long as Dylan Hartley gets banned for that swinging arm for diving.
Can you take this, some notes down, and we want to we want the Tom Wood interview on our Twitter feed, and we also want the Pape dive. If you can find that, can you retweet it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I've got that. That's your job.
I'm just
loading up my Celtic man.
There's also the incident with Nigel Owens.
Yes.
Yes, he forgot Gareth Steenson's name. So there was some sort of incident going on. He called over the captain and he said to Gareth, he goes, "What's your name?" He went, "Gareth." He went, "Right, Gareth." So it was picked up live on TV, and Brian O'Driscoll, he's been on the show.
Yeah.
He lets Nigel have it a little bit in the review show on BT Sport.
Does he?
Yeah, he sort of says, you know, Nigel should know that player's name. He's the captain of Exeter. They've had the coin toss before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can forget names on the spot, though.
Yeah.
Under pressure, you can forget names.
He knew it. Nigel then comes on Twitter and says, look, I knew his nickname was Steeno, but I forgot his first name.
Yeah.
He had a brain fart, basically.
Yeah. We've all been there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And these refs now are like, they're like public speakers out there. Like, everything they say is heard. If they stumble over their words, they make mistakes, they're hammered. It's like they've got a proper audience now.
Yeah, well, a lot of them will go into after dinner speaking as well, won't they? Because of the stories they've got. Nigel Owens is very good. If you ever get a chance to book him, or make sure you try me and Flats first, but
yeah,
he'd be a great second. Very funny.
Yeah, very, he is good. Very, very
He's got
funny.
Lots and lots of stories.
Mm. He's very, very good, yeah.
I don't know if you might not have seen it, but the Keelan Giles try for the Ospreys.
Yes, ridiculous.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
This guy has to play. They have to involve him in Wales soon.
Mate, why would you pick him when you're Alex Cuthbert? I'm being bitchy now. We've said what we think about this, but I have. He's got to play for Wales, and they should have started him against Japan, whatever they didn't. He has to play, because to play, it was all about, what's he like to play against? And for me, he is terrifying. The thought playing against him is terrifying.
Raw pace.
Yeah.
Now, I was quick, but...
Oh, God, you were quick.
I had to do it the hard way. You know, I didn't do it with, like, cleans and snatch and all that. You know, yeah. I just was just naturally fast. I was the great white hope. But this guy...
Yeah, really white. You're the great translator.
This guy is rapido.
Yeah, he is, yeah.
They are crying out for him. There's a spot in Wales on the wing.
Since Shano retired, mate.
Since Shano retired. No one will ever fill that man's boots, but...
No.
They can't.
Mainly because most of them have adult shoe sizes.
They're size four.
Yeah. Imagine the money he's saved on kit over the years. Incredible.
No.
Any other results that stand out for you? We're missing loads, I expect, but Bath got humped at Cardiff.
Yeah, they did.
You were there?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what happens when Sam comes back, when Warby comes back. That's what happens. He opens a can of it and that's it. Job done. Did he play well?
He's all right. He's not in my good books at the moment.
Why not?
Well, we...
Careful, mate. You know, this is my buddy now.
I know. You do get very protective. It's like a child.
Yeah, we've got so much in common.
Yeah, mostly Range Rover.
Yes.
Yeah. we booked a dinner. We've got a dinner going. You know that. You're hosting it.
I'm hosting it.
Yeah. It was a previous Six
with
Nations.
Sam.
With Sam and James Haskell, and he's pulled out last minute.
Oh.
Yeah. He's got an Adidas photo shoot that he's doing now instead of it, which is very annoying for me. Have you ever pulled out of dinner last night?
Do you know, the pulling out of dinners is...
It's annoying because we sold it on him being there.
Yeah. Pulling out... Rugby players pulling out of dinners, excuse me, is a real thing.
Excused.
But, you know, because I had a couple of testimonial events a few years ago, but I know lots of people that plan events, so I host Compare a lot of events, so you get to know the organisers.
Yeah.
And I can't remember going to a rugby event where major names haven't pulled out really close to the event. And sometimes you can't do it, right? Sometimes you have to pull out of an event, and that's life. It's the way it goes. Fixture list gets changed. You know, that's fine. Sometimes there's something you just cannot move.
Yeah.
But as a rule, I would say, I'm not saying this about Sam, because I've got no idea. I didn't know he pulled out of the dinner, and I don't know anything about his schedule, and he's a lovely man, so give him the benefit of the doubt. But as a rule, I would say that 90% of pull-out excuses are bollocks. I pulled out of one dinner last minute.
Because of bollocks.
Yeah. Because of my bollocks. But I was hosting at Esher Rugby Club for John Inverdale a few years ago, and I pulled out the day before the event. No, speaking, he was hosting, I was guest speaker, because my wife went into labour early.
Mm.
And in fairness, she was still...
That-
she was still having the baby when the dinner was going on, so I couldn't have been there.
Pretty shit excuse, but
it is a shit excuse. But it isn't.
Wasn't even yours.
It isn't. Yeah. I wouldn't miss a game for that probably, but I would miss a speech. But that's the only one. But I went back 2 years later and did it.
I did. I've done one as well. It was with Tumble Rugby Club. I ended up doing. I had to do Be In Sports in Doha, but
Doha.
Yeah, but I will do something for Tumble.
Yeah.
So if anyone from Tumble is listening, you can get me FOC.
Mm.
Probably for the Six Nations.
Freaky old. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's a real thing, and I remember doing my testimonial. Just the best guys were the guys that, and I learned a lot. I really learned a lot about how to behave on sort of on the circuit, but
yeah,
how much work it is to organise.
You have to turn up to events. You can't pull out last minute because it will get around. It will get around. You're unreliable unless you're like a huge, huge, massive name like Marlon Johnson. Or Marlon Williams or Shane Williams.
But they turn up, mate.
Which are always going to get work, even if they pull out.
Yeah. They could be tossers and still get loads of work.
Yes.
But the reason they're so popular is partly because they were such good players, but because they turn up.
Yep.
So I did this, or I might have done this, I said this on another pod, but I organised, my mate organised an event before the World Cup in whatever month it was, September, whatever, in London. And he said, I don't know any of the rugby guys. Can you get two massive legends, one from New Zealand, one from England, to come? To do a Q&A after lunch with our clients. So I got Martin Johnson and Sean Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
You ring them both up and it's like, mate, this date, this time, can you make it? Yep, no problem. Do you want a car? Do you want transport? No, you're right, mate. Jono's like, oh, I'll get the train and get the tube over, it's quicker.
Yeah.
And it's like, do you want a booking form? No, you're right, mate. See you there. I got one text from Sean Fitzpatrick or his agent or something saying, what time does it finish roughly? I said, roughly 4 o'clock, cool. It ended up finishing at 5, no complaints. They both just turn up, done. Absolutely reliable, perform brilliantly,
brilliant.
Really good with all the people.
Yeah.
And you just think, so during my testimonial, I remember ringing Nick Easter and saying, Nick, would you like to come to a dinner? And he knows the score. He knows that it just helps out if you say yes, because you're trying to organise so much stuff. I said, would you come as a guest? And he was like, mate, I'll be there. This is months in advance. Text me the date and time. So I text him and he says, dress code. Do you want me to bring any other lads to help fill tables with players?
Yeah.
I said, if you could bring two more, that'd be great. Didn't hear another word from him. Assumed, oh, typical rugby lad, he's not coming.
Yeah.
Turns up 5 minutes before the start, 5 minutes early, with two other lads from Quinns. Done.
Brilliant.
You're like, legends. They're all suited and booted, straight from training, sweat on the tube. They were there for the whole thing. You're like, that. Then Nick Easter, a couple of years later, says, will you host a dinner for me in Mayfair or whatever it is for my testimonial?
No problem.
What's your fee? I said 100%. There is no fee. You know, you 100% do that.
Yeah.
So that's how to behave, and I do think the pullout rate is just brutal on these things, and it's a bit old school. But I think you have to, you know, and this isn't a comment on Sam. I'm sure there's a good reason because he seems like a great guy. But he is a great guy. But just bloody well turn up and do what you said you were going to do, because that is when people start saying it's turning into football, when lads just do what they want and don't do what they can't be asked doing because it doesn't help them, you know. That's how I feel about it. Shanks, this might be our most rambliest ever pod so far, but we're going to ramble on some more. We've got some questions, actually loads of questions, so thank you everyone for sending those in. The first one is via email from Greg West, and it's a very long email, Greg, so don't do that again, mate. Okay,
the
this is short.
Brother of John, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mother of John.
Yeah.
Brother of John. John. Who's John West? Are you thinking Fred West?
No, that's. Why do I think that? He makes tuna.
I don't know, because you're a weirdo.
John West makes tuna.
John West makes tuna. Jesus Christ, we've sunk low.
Who said Fred?
Yeah,
that's
I know.
Even worse.
Yeah. All right, look. Question. When building alliance or international squad, how much balance do you need between experience and form? So, for example, if Alan Wynne-Jones has a poor Six Nations or gets a bit injured and is rusty, do you still pick him because he's so experienced and so been so good in the past that level, or do you go straight with, you know, Itoji and Henderson because Alan Wynne's lost a bit of form?
Yeah, it is experience and form. I agree with that. But someone like Alan Wynne will never play badly. I've not seen him play badly for Wales or his club. He just doesn't. He's just not that type of player.
Mm.
What he does is incredibly good. It's nothing flash, but you know, he's got an offloading game, he's got a carrying game, he always performs, he's so intense. So intense in training, you don't want to be partnered with him, you know, in tackle drills and,
yeah,
and
things like that. Loves it.
Always gets up for it. But you know, if he's been injured and he's sat on the bench a few times and what have you, and they're picking the Lions, 100% I would pick him, because he knows what it's like to perform at that level. Because there's players who play great for their club, but they make that step up to international level, they realise that the space isn't there, you know, they can't dominate their opposite number because everyone's the same size. But this guy is a proven warrior, and potentially could be captain as well.
Yeah, I want to accuse you of being biased because you're a Welshie, but I don't think you are. I don't think you pick international teams purely on form, and I think lots of fans want coaches to do that. But actually, as a coach, I think you want players in form. What you want least of all is players in bad form. And hope they're going to find something. So you want guys playing reasonably close to their full potential, but you want to pick a good number of guys that you can feel confident are going to deal with that pressure really well. So
I know that they can.
Yeah. But of course, they only know Alan Wynne-Jones deals really well with the pressure because one time they took a punt on him, you know, a couple of tours ago. So they've got to take a punt on some people. But then, say you've got—I realise it'll probably be Johnny Sexton playing 10 or bigger or whatever. But then, say you've got Farrell versus Ford as an example for the British Lions 10 in the minds of the coaches. And I realise that isn't the case. I'm just using those names as an example. George probably offers more all round in terms of sort of creative kicking game, whatever, attacking game. But it just feels like more of a punt to select him than it does Owen Farrell, who's been there and who is so composed at the top level. Occasionally lashes out,
doesn't make many mistakes either, doesn't miss many tackles.
He seems almost to concentrate harder the bigger the occasion and be cooler. So he'll lash out every now and again, but luckily he plays in the same team as Dylan Hartley, so no one ever notices his cheap shots.
I've got one here from Alistair on Twitter, @HRTinker. He says, "Boys, given the plethora of red cards, is the risk that this just kills the spectacle and the product?"
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think so. I think we need a TMO, but you can use a TMO too much for too many things. I would welcome a conversation around reducing the number of incidents or the number of sort of areas in which a TMO can be used, because I think it takes up so much of the game now. And
so you're saying that it's getting a bit soft.
So the cards, yeah, I think there needs a regulation, and player safety needs to come first. But
you can see why red cards are dished out for tackles in the air and what have you, because that can be incredibly dangerous. You know, if someone's feet go beneath them in the air, they land on their neck. I think that's one of the most serious ones.
There's a balance here, isn't there? So I don't, you know, I've got girls, I might not play rugby, but say what my kids are playing rugby, do I want it to be illegal to tip them on their head from 6 feet in the air? Well, they're related to me, so they're never going to get off the ground. But no, I don't. I don't want that. I want it to be illegal. So there is a balance there, but it's a delicate balance, because I think, and I say this, you know, in a considered fashion, I'm not being reckless, because I've played myself and I didn't want to get hurt when I played. I equally didn't want to hurt other people. But I think rugby has to remain dangerous. That's part of its charm. That's part of, not crazy, doesn't mean we allow everything.
Yeah.
But I think if you over-sanitise the sport, and I think we are in grave danger of doing that now. I think the balance is going too far. Kirtley Bill's yellow card, it's only a yellow card, who cares, they won anyway. Didn't affect the game at all, but it's just an absolute joke. And, you know, I don't despair, because who am I to despair about rugby? I love rugby, but that's why we're here. But I sort of think it can go way too far, and a good talking to from a ref and a good, you know, I think you could use that a lot more often than cards.
I've got another one on Twitter from T Davis @MCTommyD, whatever. He's correcting us, because I think last week we talked about one of the longest runs in international rugby. With New Zealand, and that England could beat it in the Six Nations without playing New Zealand.
Mm.
quite clever, that, isn't it? Anyone think that was thought up?
Yeah.
Last year.
Good idea. Yeah, good idea.
He says, just listen to this week's podcast. Cyprus have the longest win streak as an international.
I've replied to that. Tier one, we're talking about. We're talking about tier one. We're not talking about. I mean, respect. I want to be respectful here. What are Cyprus? Tier 40?
Well, mate, my
is that respectful?
For Blum's cousin plays for him.
Exactly.
Dom. Yeah.
Born and bred. I've got a mate
about your size, but plays in the centre.
There you go. I've got a mate that plays
like,
for Malta.
He's like your size, but with Mark Mapletoft's legs.
Oh, poor guy.
Yeah. So quite nippy.
Small and hairy.
Yeah. Real fast twitch, though.
But we're talking tier one, Chief. You know that as well as I do. A question here from, I've got to try and find out who asked it, Tommy.
Do you want me to hit you with one?
Don't hit me.
Okay.
I want to know who asked it. You hit me with one and I'll try and find it, because I don't want to ask a question without giving somebody credit.
It's probably quite good for you. Dylan Miles on Twitter has said, have you ever had a new season's jersey and thought, this is hanging?
Yeah, I love
Shanks, time. I'm thinking Wales grey Reebok World Cup top.
Yeah, you must have had some, mustn't you?
Yeah, there's been a few. Yellow doesn't really suit me. And Wales have had a few.
No, it washes you out, doesn't it?
Wales have a few. Looks like I've got a hoodie on. Wales have had a few dodgy autumn international tops. That was one. Cardiff Blues had an electric pink top. I think they might still use it for a third kit.
I don't mind a bit of pink, actually.
It's not too bad, but this is electric pink. It looked worse on Paul Tito than it did on me.
I can't imagine much looking good on Paul Tito, because if you're 6'6 with fluorescent
hair, balaclava does, mate.
You're going to battle, aren't you?
We did have, back in 2007, some terrible, the new type of material tops were coming out. They're all pretty good now. A lot of science behind them, but these were like stretchy material, and they were Reebok, but Reebok hadn't really thought them out properly. They were a bit of a new product out, and every time you ran, the jersey would just lift up a little bit over your belly, so your little spunk pot would come out, and
your little what?
Well, your little tummy would come out, and you'd see your little tummy, and it wasn't the best. I mean, I got away with it, but for people your dap. I know Adam Jones didn't like it.
No, I wouldn't like that.
No.
No. Question from Tom Gardner, that's who asked it.
Okay.
Via email. I'll abbreviate the question for you, Tom Gardner, because again, it's an 800 worder. Dylan Hartley, do you think Dylan Hartley should freshen things up with a move away from the Gardens? Would that help him on the pitch performance-wise, for Saints, that is? I'm not sure how a move away from the Gardens would help him
go to France
in terms of his performance wise.
That'll clear up his behaviour.
Yeah, well, I get it back, won't he?
Yeah.
I don't actually. I think Dylan is a really interesting one. So John Smith for years led South Africa without, in the view of many, being the best hooker in South Africa, because Bismarck, Duplessis, Skulk Brits, you know. But he had such a presence. Dylan has that presence. People like to hate him, and a lot of people have good reason to disapprove of how he behaves sometimes on the field. But the facts remain that while he has missed Lions tours, and he could have had a lot more caps had he not been banned, or significantly more, he does have 70-odd caps for England, and that suggests a pretty decent level of consistency and availability more than anything else. I'm not going to go down the route of saying he's a great guy, because no one really gives a toss whether I like him or not, whether we like him. We say everyone are great guys. We don't, actually. But I know him well enough to know that he hates himself for doing these things sometimes. He just loses a bit of control. Now, I'm not going to go down the line of saying, well, Martin Johnson wasn't perfect. Danny Grewcock, Darren Garforth weren't perfect. Mike Teague wasn't perfect. It's a different game now, and you can't do that stuff anymore. So there's no point in comparing that. Jamie George, I think, is the best hooker in England.
Yeah, he's playing really well.
There are some really good young ones. But I think, were I Eddie Jones, I would still pick Dylan Hartley as starting hooker and captain.
I loved Eddie Jones's face when Dylan Hartley went off.
Yeah.
Just puts his hand over his
but
face.
It's almost, he probably looks at that and think, oh, he'll either be banned for our games or just a ball ache in PR terms. But he knew what he was getting. And not that swinging arm in particular, Dylan's edge and the way he sometimes steps over it
Yeah.
is... I think the reason, and his presence as a bloke is the reason he's England captain. It's not for his rugby. His rugby's very good. Of course it is. Of course it is. But there are, I think, probably better all-round hookers in the league. But Dylan has something about him. And until you've played against him, and I realise I'm being a smug twat that played when everyone else didn't. Until you've played against him and with him, you can't really understand that.
You're not smug.
I'm not smug. He's a different guy. He's different. And that edge, if you remove that edge, I don't think he offers enough to be England captain. That's what I think. And so you don't want to remove that edge. You want to stop him hurting people.
Yeah. Talk about presence. I always used to think Dai Young would always have a big presence.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when just someone walks into the room and people stop, people look up. He was one. Francois Pina was probably the first one I really witnessed, because I came from London Welsh, went to Saracens, and he was obviously a World Cup winning captain. And when he came in the room, people just shut up and listened. Scott Grinnell, another one.
Mm.
I like to think I have it a lot.
You think you've got that?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Anyway, the question... Do we think Dylan should leave Northampton? No, I don't, actually. I think he's just has a few bad times there. And what's awkward is that they pay him shed loads of money, I expect.
Doesn't bother me. Doesn't bother me, really. But I don't think... Why would he?
I mean, he'd go anywhere he wants, within reason. He could go to France and pick up a massive paycheck. And let's not forget, it's kind of like... You know, he's getting a lot of grief at the moment for not doing a huge amount for Saints and doing a lot for England. Firstly, factually there's merit in that, but I don't think it's intentional from him at any point. I think he's shown his loyalty to Northampton by not going abroad or to other clubs and taking massive pay rises and staying there.
Yeah.
So he's loyal, and I think the way he plays shows loyalty, but every now and again he loses sight of the bigger picture and just loses the plot and whacks somebody and gets banned and it costs his club. And I think, you know, he's getting a lot of airtime today, but we both played in the same team as Danny Grucock, and it's a different game then, I know that, but people just accepted, because he wasn't so high profile. He got 69 caps himself, but he was a really low profile guy, so he was never the captain of, he was captain of Bath and hated it, so gave it back. Low pro guy, never did media, that sort of stuff, didn't like it. So people just kind of loved him for the fact that every now and again he lost his temper. And while that isn't safety first and it's not very PC, Dylan is kind of similar, but just not loved for it. He's kind of hated for it. And I don't like this kind of mob attack culture. That's what I don't like.
Can we put it to bed now? I think we've talked about it enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Is Manu going to get back in the team now that Ford and Farrell and Joseph are playing so well? That is a question from Matt on email.
Probably. I don't think so. I think there's room for him on the bench over Ben Teo.
That's be a big seat. Got massive arms.
Yeah, he has. But no, I again, it's no odds to me. It's annoying that he's back, because obviously the Six Nations is around the corner
and he's going to pump Wales off the bench.
Well, you say that, but last time he played against Wales was at the Millennium Stadium, 30-3, and the doctor dominated him.
It's all steroids though, isn't it, over there?
Growth,
apparently. It's all GH, isn't it?
So I don't like it, but as an outsider, as a neutral, I don't think he deserves to walk straight back into that team. I think that combination of Ford, Farrell and Joseph is working incredibly well. What he does offer you is some massive go forward. He offers you a hard edge in the back line, which they don't really have any big ball carriers, not huge. They've got Johnny May, who's a big bloke, but no tough, hard yards, going to get over the game line, going to make some huge hits. But you know, he'll have to wait for injuries and he'll have to work himself back in.
Ben Teo on the bench is kind of that barrel, sort of powerful yard maker, explosive guy on the bench, isn't he? And yeah, I agree with you. I think Manu could take his spot on the bench. But I think if Joseph gets injured, then Elliot Daly just slots straight in at the moment. And I think that when he's allowed to play. And I think if, you know, Farrell gets injured, then there's another conversation around 12, and do you want a Henry Slade in there who could effectively do a lot of what Farrell does, or do you want a mutant in there like Manu? So interesting, but I for now I'd say he looks like a lovely option off the bench if he's fully fit.
We just got to touch on the Lions coaching team. We haven't talked about
that. We've had loads of questions about that.
Yeah.
Shall I just quickly do mine, then you do yours?
Yeah, go.
Borthwick, brilliant choice. Andy Farrell, brilliant choice. Rob Howley, don't get it, boy.
Okay.
Don't get it. Feel really bad because someone told me recently that he takes the all the criticism really personally, and we've all been there. We've been criticised. I mean, he's a lot more attention than we ever got, or certainly than I ever got. Maybe not you because you're a legend, but
guilty.
You know, so I don't quite know what it's like. But I know that whenever I was criticised, I really didn't like it. So, you know, you do bear that in mind. But that's got nothing to do with what we're saying. We're not saying he's a horrible dad. Or anything
okay,
like
so,
that.
So
I just think he hasn't done anything to show that he deserves that spot.
I agree with your other two. Borthwick, I think, is a good recruitment, and so is Farrell. But you're saying Halley's not done anything to deserve that. You forget he went last. He's been the last 8 years. He went. They won a
two tours.
A successful tour in Australia.
Yeah.
First time they've done that in a long time. And if Gregor Townsend isn't going to want to do it, if Joe Schmidt isn't going to do it, there's not many options, is there?
I feel like I would want, maybe there are further announcements to be made, I would want someone to go who has shown in the last 12 months that, not necessarily from a standing start, but they can go into a room and onto a training field and create a really, really destructive attack. That's what I want to see.
What I do, because I obviously played under Gatland and Howley, I think what they do need now is someone, a bit of a maverick, a bit of a coaching maverick to add to the team. Someone that's going to look at different ways to attack rather than just testing teams physically, testing teams mentally in defence. So someone like we said about Gregor Townsend, how good he would be as an attack coach. Now, he's not going to want to do it, but they're going to add some specialist teams. You know,
apparently there are more announcements to be made, aren't there?
Yeah, so you know, we might see Bod
yeah.
you know, coming on that tour. Someone that's going to
have... Wilkinson,
yeah,
maybe.
Someone's going to have an input into... Right, you can't always take teams on... You can't take the All Blacks on physically. You're going to have to test them mentally. Mm-hmm. You know, so create space by separating the centres, by separating the centre and the wing. Someone very, very attack-minded, I think, has to come in for that balance. But, you know, I wasn't too disappointed with seeing Rob Howley up there. They did it 4 years ago or 3 years ago. He was a great player himself. He's coached at the highest level. As a coach, if you get asked to coach the Lions, you're not going to turn down. It's like a player, isn't it?
No, God, no. But I mean, in terms of him being a great player, I absolutely agree. But I don't think that's relevant to his coaching job. But I'm going to give you three English names,
all right,
who I think would be really exciting additions to that coaching squad.
Yep.
And they're English bias because they're English. I'm just giving you three English ones. I'm going to give you Austin Healey. He knows a huge amount about the game, very bright,
doesn't coach,
great communicator, yeah, not an experienced coach, but I think it could be fun. This is fun.
Okay.
And Will Greenwood.
Okay, I'm going to go Jurgen Klopp.
I think Jurgen Klopp, yeah. So I think I think they would be interesting. That's just for fun, but I think someone who under the radar is doing a really good job in the Premiership attacking, in terms of attack, is Dave Walder at Newcastle. They look really, really good, and not every week, they don't look really good every week, but quite a good number of times this season they've produced really, really detailed attack. And they're playing.
So he's like your wild card pick.
Yeah, they are honest. They're cutting apart different types of defences, and you can tell their preparation is really, really intricate and really, really well communicated, because you've got players who aren't rock star players carrying out a plan really, really well. So I don't know much about coaching a back line or a rugby team to attack against high end defences. But what I do know is what I watch every weekend, and there aren't many teams with the resources they've got at Newcastle carving up good quality defences like they are. So he's not going to go on the Lions trip. I just think he's doing a really good job. But
you're saying someone like that?
Someone different, like Brian O'Driscoll's not a coach. Johnny Wilkinson might do a bit of kicking coaching, but he's not an experienced coach. And equally, we've had this conversation before, I think maybe in this very room. I don't think great players should just get great coaching jobs for the sake of it. But now and again, you meet someone who's a bit different, and you think this guy could turn up. Like Borthwick, he's only been coaching 5 minutes, and he's a Lions coach
now.
Well,
Will Greenwood coached the Barbarians, so is that a step?
Yeah, and they went well against the Springboks. The Springboks are awful, but I don't know. I just think these are just the guys I know. And Alex King is, you know, he got sacked from Saints, but I never heard a bad word about him in attack. And Paul Grayson, I know well enough to know that I sit and sometimes commentate on games with him or watch games with him. And he'll say something, and I'm just like, oh, that is why you got loads of caps for England at fly half.
Yeah.
You just see things completely differently, and I can see things he can't in the tight and whatever, but he sees things, you're just like, that is genius. He should have just stayed there and waited for the ball, and you're like, yep, if you were coaching me, that would be just a drop of gold, you know.
Yeah, cool.
Happy with that?
Yeah.
Should we stop?
Yeah, we've gone on a long time now.
Yeah.
Plenty of ways to contact us, isn't there? Twitter, always the same.
At Flats and Shanks.
At Flats and Shanks.
Email,
contact@flatsandshanks.com.
Facebook.
Yeah, Flats and Shanks.
Get amongst it. What are you doing this week? Tell me.
Not a lot, mate. I'm having a quiet week this week. I've got a kids concert I'm looking forward to mentally. Christmas drinks on Friday.
Mm.
I've had a few busy weeks, mate. So hopefully next Monday we're going to have a guest presenter on the show. We're just trying to book him or her now. So as soon as we do, we'll release it on Twitter. We could even do a Facebook Live next Monday.
Can't we just tell him who we're going to try and get?
Okay, go.
We are trying to get Nigel Owens himself. The King of Cardiff. Is he from Cardiff? No. King of Wales. Is he from Wales? Yeah.
Yeah, he is.
Nigel Owens, the man. We're trying to get him on board for it to guest present, and that will, I'm pretty confident, be really, really good.
I'm going to call him Babe all through the interview.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're not going to make any jokes about the gay stuff because that's not funny anymore. It's 2016. Yeah, we might. We might make some. And if he doesn't turn up, we're going to say, like they do at every dinner when Nigel Owens isn't there, we're going to say that he got stuck in Barry, which is what everyone said for the last 5 years at every dinner.
Or Chester.
Sydney. Sydney. We've done this before, haven't we? Warwick. We've done this.
He's not even in Australia. Yeah, we'll do it again, mate.
We'll do it again. It's timeless. Yeah. So hopefully, I've got a Land Rover shooting day tomorrow. So nice. Shooting clay pigeons and going off-roading. I'm going up with Henry Thomas, the bar prop.
You're such a bloke.
I know, I'm such a manly man.
Yeah.
I'm going up with Henry Thomas, actually. He isn't with Land Rover, but they said bring a plus one, and he is one of the most attractive women I know. So. I don't know him that well, actually. I just think he's a lovely bloke.
Are you going to shoot him? You're any good?
Nah, terrible.
Yeah.
No.
So short little arms. Your arms like T-Rex, haven't you?
I know. I need baby guns that fire real bullets. I'm too honest, mate. I'm not into shooting. I'm not into it.
You just like the dress, don't you?
I like the meat that comes from it, but I like the kit.
You like the tweed, the cords.
Yeah, yeah, we're tweed brogues and the cords, yeah.
That's you in a nutshell. You are Barber.
Yeah, I am, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Without being sponsored, sadly. But I am open to coach sponsorship.
You still wear Timberland shoes, don't you? The old school. Yeah.
No, I don't, mate. Yeah, herring shoes, you know that.
All right.
That is sponsored, okay?
Okay.
So we'll have a nice time and Christmas plays and I've got a really important meeting with Land Rover on Thursday.
Cool. Can you get me one?
Which is four of us going for a curry in Mayfair. Well, nice. Called Gymkhana. You ever heard of it? Best curry I've
It's a horse show,
ever
isn't it?
Eaten. No, it's amazing, mate. Gymkhana in Mayfair.
What
is
time?
Amazing.
When?
See you there 12:30 on Thursday.
Can I turn up?
Yeah, of course you can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get your car, mate. Get as many as you want.
Simple.
Yeah, it doesn't work like that, unfortunately.
No. Okay.
All right, so let's hopefully we'll see you guys next week with Big Nige. Imagine that.
Make sure you review the podcast.
Yeah, review us, for God's sake.
5 stars.
Okay.
Cheers.
Ta-da.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.